Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Oakland Raiders punter, formerly a Minnesota Viking, Chris Cluey, came to prominence last year when his blistering, deadly articulate letter to a Maryland state politician went viral. The politician thought a football player had no place standing up for gay rights, and Chris Cluey felt completely differently and said so. Not your average professional athlete, Chris is committed to supporting gay marriage and has even posed shirtless in Out magazine. But he's a straight husband and father of two. He's a football player who turned down Harvard. He's a gamer, a geek, extraordinarily passionate, and shockingly sharp-tongued, as evidenced in his new book, Beautifully Unique Sparkle Ponies on Myths, Morons, Free Speech, Football, and Assorted Absurdities. The book is published by Little Brown, and we welcome Chris Cluey to this morning's roundtable.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's start with the most obvious question. Beautifully unique sparkle ponies. How did that come into your vernacular?
Well, when I wrote it for the censored version of my letter, it was to replace a word that a bunch of people had latched onto, which was lustful sea monsters. And I figured that would be a fun book title that Barnes & Noble could actually stock on their shelf.
Give us a sense of what you made of the fact that your letter went viral, the fact that people, it says a lot about our culture and especially the culture of the NFL that your story struck such a chord.
Yeah, well, and I think a lot of that has to do with, the majority of people that watch sports may not necessarily be that interested in the political world. You know, it's entertainment. It's something you watch to kind of tune out. So I think when an athlete says something and is able to say it in a way that people can pick up fairly easily, then they really start to notice issues that maybe they haven't been thinking about before.
So for you, when did you start to think about this issue, and what was it about this particular action in Maryland that got your dander up and realized that you wanted to say something about it?
Well, I've always been raised to treat other people the way I'd like to be treated. So that's something I've tried to live my life by is, you know, treating people equally, because that's how I would prefer to live my life. And then I got involved with a group called Minnesotans for Marriage Equality last year when they asked me to help defeat the constitutional amendment in Minnesota banning same-sex marriage. And I said that, yeah, I'd be happy to help out because that seems like a great thing to do. And after that, I'd been involved with them for about 2 or 3 months, and I saw the letter that Delegate Burns had written to the Ravens, and it really kind of upset me on two levels. One was a First Amendment issue, the fact that he wrote it on official state stationery and referenced himself and his constituents. That's clearly a First Amendment violation. You can't do that. And then secondly, why does he care? You know, why does he care how other people live their lives, how two, you know, a loving couple, what they do with each other? Why does that affect his life? Because it doesn't. It's really, he's just trying to control how other people live. And to me, that's un-American.
You wrote in the letter, "Your vitriolic hatred and bigotry make me ashamed and disgusted to think that you are in any way responsible for shaping policy at any level." What impact do you think it had on him, on the issue, and especially his thoughts that he shared with his constituents?
Well, hopefully it made him realize that this is a human rights issue. It's the same human and civil rights issue that we've been facing for probably the last 160, 170 years in this country, which is a group of people want to benefit from the same protections that everyone else has, and they're not being allowed to. You know, whether that's slavery, whether that's suffrage, whether that's segregation. It's you know, we've had this fight every 50 to 60 years, and right now it's same-sex rights. So hopefully he was able to, you know, look that over and maybe realize that in an America of 60 years ago, Delegate Burns would not have been allowed to hold office. He would not have been able to be elected. And so in this day and age, if a same-sex couple wants to have a job, they can get fired from, I think it's like 29 states in the United States, simply for being gay. And that's not a country that I want my children to grow up in.
There was a lot of attention on your letter, of course, and there was a lot of attention to what you wrote to Delegate Burns. But as you point out, it was ultimately you were inspired by another football player, a Baltimore Raven.
Yeah, that's correct. Brandon Iambejo. He kind of originally started doing this. He'd been recording PSAs for, I think, to help with the initiative measures in Maryland, recorded a YouTube video. And he's been vocal and passionate about it. And, you know, when I saw Delegate Burns at basically attacking him and his ability to speak up, that's really what made me upset.
What do you think the culture is in the NFL? I mean, do you find that your opinion is a rare voice?
No, I'd say it's about the same as it is in society. You know, there are people who get it, there are people who don't get it, and then there's a vast majority of people who just kind of want to be left alone to live their own lives, which is really, you know, what happens in the United States. And I, from what I've seen in my time in the NFL, when I first came in, there were definitely more people against same-sex rights than there were for it, but you see this shift happening over the years as younger kids grow up and enter the NFL because our society is moving towards more and more tolerance. And you see that reflected in the views of the kids coming up and playing in the NFL. Because nowadays, they're like, what's the big deal? You know, why is this an issue? Why do we care? Because they've been able to grow up with gay teammates, with gay friends, with gay family members. So it's not something to be afraid of. It's not something unknown.
When all of this came out and your letter hit the web, went viral, what was the reaction from your teammates and from other teams around the league?
I was actually very supportive. I had a bunch of guys come up to me. About half of them said, you know, while we may not agree with you on same-sex rights issues, you know, we appreciate you stood up for Brendan because that's the First Amendment issue. And then the other half said, we agree with you on everything. You know, we think you did the right thing. And I also had guys from other teams come up to me before games and say, you know, hey, great job with that letter, man. We, you know, we support you. And to me, that really just shows that kind of societal impact of people in the NFL is that, you know, football players are not just athletes. We don't exist in a vacuum. We exist in our culture. And right now you're seeing that culture shifting in the United States.
And with that culture shifting, we are seeing, very slowly, but we are seeing players who are coming out and playing in major sports in this country.
Yeah, and that's something that is, you know, that's the next step that's going to take place, is that players will come out, it will be news for a bit because no one has played as openly gay before, and then 5, 10, 15 years down the line, it won't be news anymore because people will realize it doesn't matter what your sexuality is. It matters, can you play the game? That's, you know, that's really what people are watching sports for. How well, you know, do you throw a football? How well do you catch a baseball? How well do you shoot a basketball? There's stuff like that. And I really think that's kind of the desired end goal that everyone's working for.
What are the challenges in that, do you think? Are there challenges inherent in the sports world that make that difficult?
I'd say probably the biggest challenge in the sports world is just the fact that teams don't want players to be regarded as a distraction, and there's this idea that having a gay player, an openly gay player, would be a distraction for your team. And yeah, there might be some media attention for a couple weeks because obviously it's going to be a historical event, but at the same time, you have to weigh the idea that this is a distraction versus how much better would your athletes perform if they didn't have to hide an essential part of who they were. I mean, that was one thing from Jason Collins' article that really struck me, is that he wrote, in the past 33 years, I felt like I've been baking in an oven every day of my life. Mm. And that's, you know, that's got to affect your athletic performance. Who knows how well he could have played if he didn't have to hide who he was. Sarah Tuolo, he actually played for the Vikings 10, 12 years ago. I've had a chance to talk with him. And he said, you know, he'd be terrified out on the field whenever he made a big play and he saw his name flash up on the lights. He's like, oh, no, did someone find out who I am? You know, am I going to be able to keep playing? So just stuff like that is really this idea that you're a distraction, I think, really needs to be looked at and just kind of shot down because it's not true.
Of course, you played with Minnesota and now you're going to Oakland. What is it like to make a move like that?
Well, it's a bummer because I've gotten to know a lot of people in Minnesota. I was there for about 8.5 years, so I made a bunch of friends, got to know the community really well. But unfortunately, that's one of the realities of the NFL, is that as players, you don't really have much of a choice in where you're going to play. You pretty much have to go where you can. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to playing in Oakland, looking forward to getting out and showing that I can still perform at an NFL level. And, yeah, just getting ready for next season.
Did you want them or they didn't want you? How did that work?
I don't know. I wasn't in the meetings. I wasn't there for, you know, the GM and coaches talking to each other. So they let me know that, you know, they drafted a punter in the fourth round or in the fifth round. And I figured, okay, yeah, it's probably a sign that they're not going to keep me. And then a couple weeks later, they were like, yeah, we're going to let you go. And I was like, okay, well, you know, thanks.
So do you think it has anything to do with being outspoken, or do you think it has everything to do with how you play on the field?
Again, I don't know. I wasn't in the meetings. I don't know what the rationale is. All I know is that statistically I've been the best punter in Vikings history, and you know, I've been pretty consistent over the years. So that's my goal with Oakland, is to just go back out and show, you know, how well I can punt.
Would it bother you if it was, and if it had something to do with being outspoken, of saying what you say on Twitter, of saying what you say, of writing a book like you've written?
Yeah, I think it would bother me if that was the case, because it's you know, it's one of those things where when I'm at the football field, I'm 100% focused on football, but when I'm away from football, that's when I get to live my life. And this idea in this country that you have to spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, solely thinking about your job is really destructive. Like, it's this thought that you can't have your own life. You can't, you know, you always have to be working. You always have to have your mind on the job. And frankly, that's not very healthy. That's a good recipe for insanity.
So, I mean, you said this early on. The one thing that the NFL doesn't want is a player who's a distraction. So do you think in any way, shape, or form you've become a distraction?
I don't know. I mean, it's possible. Obviously, you don't see many punters doing interviews or writing books. But at the same time, I noticed on, I think it was earlier this offseason, that Tom Coughlin, coach of the Giants, he was, you know, going around the country promoting his new book. So the coaches can do it. Why can't the players do it?
When you think of the changes that are happening very slowly, and if I were a marketer, I would say, okay, we've got this guy who is popular, and he's out there saying good things and right things, and we want to embrace him. Do you feel that you have been embraced by the league as someone who can be an ambassador and go out and say these things?
I don't know. I think that's something the league is working towards. They're still trying to figure out what their course of action is going to be on these events, and hopefully they'll get to a point where you know, there's diversity training, guys are made aware that, look, if you want to, you know, if you want to say a profane word or swear at someone, there's plenty of other perfectly good curse words than calling someone gay or a fag. There's, you know, there's so many other words to choose from. And so you know, really just making guys aware of the fact that you don't, you know, when you say stuff like that, it can really impact the people around you, and you may not be aware of it. And that's something that I think, you know, hopefully the league will address in the future.
Realizing that it's not policy driven, and it is a bit of an apples and oranges comparison, but we have focused so much in ink and in interest in the story about the Boy Scouts in this country, and yet it seems like the NFL and the NBA and the MLB are having very similar discussions as to how, as you say, as how they want to handle this, and yet we don't discuss that in the same way.
Yeah, and again, I think that goes back to the idea that sports can only be entertainment, that when people watch sports, you know, they only want to tune out and, you know, forget about what they're doing for a couple hours. And if you look at the history of sports in this country, that hasn't been the case. Sports has been a very active driver of social change in the United States. And I think that is something that we should look at and recognize that, you know, we can make a difference because athletes are held up as role models. You know, whether you regard that as rightly or wrongly, the fact remains that people consider athletes role models. And so as role models, it's up to us to be a good role model and not a bad role model. You know, you don't want to hear about guys getting drunk or getting arrested or, you know, whatever. You'd rather hear about guys doing good things, because then that brings everyone else up.
But meanwhile, that's pretty much all you hear about.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. and really, I think that also helps drive this misconception about football players that were knuckle-dragging Neanderthals, because, unfortunately, the only ones you hear about are the guys who get in trouble, because the smart guys take care of their business, and then they go home. Well, no one wants to write a story on that. So, yeah, that kind of helps drive the image that the NFL is only populated by stupidity. But I've met a lot of very smart people in the NFL.
Although, you know, it's interesting because it seems like you have a player like yourself who goes out and has progressive views and explains them and writes about them and says them. And then you have somebody like Tim Tebow, who obviously is a very religious man. He certainly makes no bones about it. He expresses his thoughts and is also cast aside and up until being signed by the Patriots was thought not to even have a future in the league. So it really can go both ways, can it?
Yeah. And that's one of the things that, you know, while I may not agree with Tebow on a lot of stuff, I felt really bad, you know, seeing what was happening to him, because you could tell that obviously the teams thought he was a distraction and it wasn't for stuff he was doing on the football field. And, you know, that again, to me is the idea that what you do away from the football field, that is your personal life. That is your choice to make as a citizen of this country. And, you know, it really is depressing to think that we have become such a corporate culture that you're not even allowed to have your own life away from the football field, you know, no matter what that life happens to be.
And of course, the problem is when you bring that to the football field. I mean, he was putting Bible verses under his eye and in interviews and so forth. And do you think that's the problem because it's brought to the field?
Yeah, that could be a problem if you brought it in the locker room or on the field. And that was one thing I was made sure to be careful of, is that I was never going to say anything in the locker room in terms of like calling guys out or you know, preaching to guys, because frankly I'm there to play football. That is my job while I am there. If guys want to have a conversation, I'm more than happy to have that conversation with them, but I'm not going to let it, you know, distract from the reason that we're there, which is to win football games. And I made that distinction very clear because, you know, I know that that's not what I'm supposed to be doing in the locker room. You know, that's not what I'm being paid to do.
The name of the book is Beautifully Unique Sparkle Ponies: On Myths, Morons, Free Speech, Football, and Assorted Absurdities. It's published by Little Brown. Chris Chloe, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it as well.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Beautifully Unique Sparkle Ponies. It's published by Little Brown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.